Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Podcast. What is up, college lacrosse fans? You're watching an emergency version of the Lax Factor Podcast. This is episode 279, and I am your host, Ted Hoost. And today we are going to talk about the all important number four Duke coming to the Carrier Dome, or the Dome, the JMA Wireless Dome, to take on number six Syracuse. And I'm still kind of trying to figure out if what happened last night actually happened, because as I watched the game, it felt surreal throughout the entire game as Syracuse went on to drop the number four Blue Devils 10-4 in the Dome. So let's dive into the game here. I'm a little bit too excited to try to ramble anymore. But one thing, be sure to like, subscribe, and go to laxfactor.com. Support us that way. Get t-shirts, swags, all that crap. We'll revisit here halfway through. So Duke struck first with Ben Johnson, a dodge to the middle of the field on Sam Alexo. And after he scored that goal in that first 5 minutes of the game, it was a little chaotic for Syracuse, and I felt terrible. And at one point, I actually posted on Twitter. I'll show it to you here as we're talking. And I posted on Twitter that I was afraid that this game was already over just 5 minutes in. And the reason being, Duke was getting shots way too easily on the Syracuse defense. At that point, Syracuse hadn't gotten a clean shot. So by the time Johnston scored, midfielders were running, getting looks. Duke had already taken like four legitimate shots on Cage. Will Mark was already forced to make a save or two. And Syracuse offensively did not look great. So yes, I am the worst person of all time to watch a lacrosse game with, because as soon as that first goal scored and Cuse is down, I'm like, that's the ball game. Now, that wasn't the case, though. In my post, I said, I hope this ages poorly. Thank God it did. Took a little bit over 4 minutes, but Cuse answered thanks to a man-up goal by Finn Thompson, dished by Jake Stevens. He found Thompson on the high crease with his back to the cage. Thompson collected the feed, turned and finished, and now it's 1-1. And, you know, I still felt terrible overall. But that goal, in fact, in hindsight, it sparked an 8-1 run that spanned at that point that Thompson scored that goal at 6:39 in the first, and we go all the way deep into the third quarter with Syracuse outscoring Duke over that stretch 8-1. Owen Hiltz made it 3-1 on a transition goal, an easy dunk from that left wing that he loves so much on a nice bounce pass from Jake Stevens, and now it is 3-1 Syracuse. Duke would stop the bleeding for just a moment with an Andrew McAdory goal, but it was right back to work for the Orange. Luke Roa made it 4-2 off a feed from Christian Moulet with 5:36 left in the second quarter, and that's how it ended at the half. As you see here, score 4-2 at the half. I don't think anybody saw that coming. And the story of the first half, which had me still feeling very uneasy, despite the fact Syracuse was winning 4-2, was Duke at that point had won 8 of 8 faceoffs. If that had continued, ball game in favor of Duke. Duke had put 12 of their first 19 shots on Cage, forcing Will Mark into 10 first half saves. And I felt like if that continued, if Duke kept getting their shots, what are the chances that Will Mark is going to continue to make saves, and what are the chances that Duke was going to continue to shoot, or what were the chances that Duke would, you know, all of a sudden start shooting poorly and just missing the cage all willy-nilly? But what ended up happening in that second half, Syracuse turned around. They win 7 of 9 faceoffs over that second half. They were 6 of 7 in that pivotal third quarter. And then Duke, they continued to shoot the ball poorly in terms of they started missing the cage a lot more often. Will Mark continued to be good in the cage. And the result of all of that, Syracuse ended up with that 8-2 lead with 3:08 remaining in the third quarter off a Jackson Birtwistle man-up goal dished by Finn Thompson. And while Duke would end up getting two more, Syracuse would also score two more goals in that process. So it, just an incredible game, 10-4. who the hell saw that coming? Absolutely not me. I absolutely thought Syracuse could pull off a win. I thought it was more than likely Duke would win by a couple of goals with a chance that Syracuse could win, and I just did not see this 10-4 score coming. So first off, let's get into why this transpired. Billy Dwan, he was tasked with guarding Brennan O'Neill, as I expected he would be due to his size, his physicality, and I think thus far this season, Billy Dwan's been the best defender on the Syracuse roster overall. So he did a great job. O'Neill got off 11 shots, so he did get his shots, but only one of them was put past Willmark. O'Neill didn't have a single uncontested shot all day, thanks to Dwan, thanks to the help defense that Syracuse played. Riley Figueroas, who drew Josh Zuwadastraw, he also had an incredible game. He held the Michigan transfer to just a single goal off four shots. So right there, you hold Duke's top two guys to a 2-1 score, and then Dyson Williams guarded by a mixture of guys. I saw Cole on him at points. I saw short sticks on him after the defense would slide at times. They held Williams to zero goals off four shots. So that is just an absolutely incredible performance by the Syracuse close defense and by the midfielders, because the help defense they played throughout this game was absolutely incredible. The defensive midfield overall had a great day, generally winning their matchups, or even where they got beat, help was usually there. Quick slide and recovery, or Willmark stepped up to make saves. Just, I cannot say enough, and I cannot stress enough how incredible it was to watch the defense perform in this game, and how scary it was, because at all points, you know, every new possession, you're just like, all right, is this the one where the ball drops? Is this the one where things start going Duke's way? And it just didn't. And the reason it didn't go Duke's way was because that Syracuse defense was pesky. They picked up ground balls when they were presented, and they got the ball back into the offensive end. First, Cone and Mullen, I want to talk about them. They got scorched in that first half. They lost 8 of 8, but they come out and they win, 7 of 9, I think it was, over the course of the second half. So them responding in the second half, admirable and hugely important, because without that, we don't win this game either. Or maybe we would have won the game, but it might have been by a tighter margin, the way Duke's offense played. Now, offensively, the offense did what we expected them to do, hence me not, you know, gushing so far over them and talking and specifically trying to put the shine on the defense. I didn't think they'd score more than 9 to 11 goals, so they hit pretty much where I thought they would hit. I figured if they scored 10, they were going to lose by 2 or 3. Just not the case, thanks to the defense overall. Let's talk about Owen Hiltz. I was legitimate starting to wonder if we would ever see the kid that tore shit up earlier in his career after he was quiet over a 3-game stretch against Syracuse's toughest competition. So if we dive into Owen Hiltz's stats right here, what you're going to see was he tore it up in the games that you would have expected him to. You know, he ends up with 3 points against Vermont, 6 against Colgate, 6 against Manhattan. Things are looking great. But then in the most important games we played that season of the season, 0-1 against Maryland, 2-0 against Utah, and then just 1-0 in the loss to Army. So in our two losses, he's put up 2 points. That's not great. So I was wondering, is he the guy on that left wing when we're playing big teams? How is he going to be able to produce against some of these big teams? Now, I wasn't completely throwing him under the bus and doubting him. It was just that was a rough stretch, and I knew if that kind of play continued when the big teams came to town, we were going to struggle. But then High Point, not a top-tier team, but a good team. High Point, he goes 3-0. The win over number 5, Hopkins, he goes 2-3. The win over a very good Delaware, he goes 6-1. And then this win over Duke, he scores 3 goals off 9 shots. So thank God Hiltz is back here overall. His hot hand is a huge reason the Orange were able to pick up those 2 top-5 wins over Hopkins and now over Duke. If we dive a little bit deeper into the team stats on this one overall, like I said, we see Duke got a lot of shots off here, and in that first half, they put a lot more of those shots on Cage. You see in that second half, they take, 17 shots and only put 6 of them on Cage. That was huge. That was due to the defense being pesky. That was due to Willmark standing tall in Cage. And once you have a goalie over the course of a first half that makes it difficult for you to score and you're struggling anyway, that makes you kind of try to ping those corners. You start shooting a little bit more towards the pipe versus that center mass of the cage, and that definitely plays. As I said, though, Willmark, that first half, as Duke was getting all those shots, 5 saves in each of the first and the second quarter, absolutely incredible. Wasn't tested nearly as much over the course of the third, but that fourth quarter just made a couple of incredible saves to help keep Duke at bay. I think my favorite save out of Willmark on the day was the last save of the game with like 25 seconds left or whatnot. And then the turnovers. Syracuse was only was only credited with just a handful, I think, of actually forced turnovers. But the fact that Duke turned the ball over as often as they did spoke to Syracuse being in the right place at the right time. Did Duke have a good game? Did Syracuse beat Duke when Duke put up the best that they had to offer? Absolutely not. Did Duke shoot themselves in the foot and have a lot of unforced errors and just mental mistakes? Absolutely. But did Syracuse's defense cause that you know, got off the bus with the wrong mindset kind of thing? Did their defense cause that to escalate and get worse and worse as the game went on for Duke? Abso-fucking-lutely they did. That defense just played lights out all game long, and I'm happy for them. Even the man down defense, Duke had two man up opportunities, one in the second quarter, one in the fourth. They go 0-for-2. Syracuse, they convert 2 of 4 of their man up opportunities overall. Just absolutely incredible. And then we dive into the stats down here as we see Moulet 1-1. It was kind of spread out across everybody because that's what they needed to do. Leo got that early goal to make it 2-1. Spallina with 2 assists, and people are going to chirp Spallina for this one. This is how I want Spallina to play when you have an absolute dog on you like Brower. Spallina could not try to do too much against a guy like Brower because what was going to happen, he was going to end up taking 8 shots, maybe score one of them, maybe have a couple more turnovers. I actually liked that as it looked like other guys were getting looks, Spallina just let the game come to him in the situations where he got the ball. He had a dodge up the left side off a pick that resulted in a goal, was one of his assists. And I think his other assist was a little bit more opportunistic, may have even been man up. Either way, I liked that Spallina played within himself. There's going to be people that say, oh, in this huge game, Spallina did nothing. No, Spallina did what he needed to do to help his team get a win. He had the best defender in the country all over him, trying to cut down his looks. They were pressing all over the place, so I was actually pleased with how Joey Spallina played, despite the fact it was only 2 points. But key, it was 2 points that he scored in a win over the number 4 team in the country. So boo birds to come out for this. I'm not getting by that. If he had come out, taken 9 shots, scored 1 goal, and turned the ball over 4 times, boo the shit out of the kid. But I think the kid did a good job of letting the game come to him, not trying to do too much because you have an absolute dog on you in Brower. You just don't want to test him. Most people aren't going to test him here. Finn Thompson, 1-1. He had a good game. Like we said, Owen Hiltz, 3-0. Jackson Birtwistle, he had a really nice quick stick here at some point. Maybe both of them were like that. He goes 2-0. So Syracuse gets it done up and down the roster here. If we dive into what Syracuse has up next, because it's not over here. This gauntlet just continues throughout the season for Syracuse. They have Hobart this weekend and in Geneva, which is actually going to be a pretty cool atmosphere. Maybe we'll see some fish thrown on the field. Maybe we'll see fights break out between Syracuse and Hobart fans in the stands. That would be awesome. But they turn around, they play Hobart on Saturday. They got the whole week to prepare for Notre Dame the following Saturday before then hitting up Cornell on Tuesday. That Cornell game, unless work fuck something up for me, I'm going to hit that Cornell game absolutely here. So the gauntlet is going to be brutal because we do have what should be a very winnable game against Hobart, and that is the last easily winnable game that the easily winnable is relative here. I don't think that this game will be easily winnable, although I think Syracuse is capable of winning a 2-goal game, or they could blow this up and win by 8-10, but this rivalry is huge. It is real for both of these teams, so I would not be the least bit surprised to see Syracuse get the absolute best out of Hobart on Saturday. I'm not ready to call that a trap game. I don't think it's quite a trap game, but just don't sleep on Hobart in a matchup like this. But then, yeah, like I said, from there, Notre Dame, Cornell, Carolina, Virginia, just a murderer's row to finish the season out. But, let's start prognosticating and let's get ahead of ourselves here and let's start looking at what does this mean for Syracuse moving forward. I mean, right now they're 8-2. They've got a win over now-ranked Colgate, so that's not terrible for them. They have no bad losses. Their only losses are to the number 4 team in the country, the number 5 team in the country. Actually, Army was number one right now, and Maryland's still in the top, 7 or something like that. So their only 2 losses are to top 10, and both of them had spent time in the top 5. And then they beat everybody they should beat with a top 5 win over Hopkins and now a top 5 win over Duke. So theoretically, if Syracuse goes to 9-2 after beating Hobart, and even if they lost all 4 of these games, there's still a smidgen of hope that they make the NCAA tournament. I think even if they win this game against Hobart and then go 1-4 across these four games here, I think that that's it. I think they get in because all of the teams that they're playing here are going to be ranked, and none of them should be bad losses, albeit if they lost to Carolina, that's not great. I would really like to see them pick up the Cornell and Carolina games and then maybe split against Notre Dame and Virginia, but I think at that point I'm starting to get a little cocky, and I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself here. So that's it. That is all I'm going to talk about today. What a game. It's incredible. We've got a full weekend of college lacrosse coming up here on Saturday. Let's dive into a couple of the games that we're going to see here.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, there we go. Inside Lacrosse has their article up. Let's see. That's one of my client sites, actually. Okay, here we go. That was Wednesday's slate of games. Let's get to the calendar here. So Friday night, we got Brown and UMass. I'm tempted to take Brown to at least cover on that one. That's a tough call. And then a very good game should be had Friday night, Boston U versus Army. That's kind of must-see TV at this point. Army sitting at number one. Do they deserve the number one ranking? If they can beat Boston U, and especially if they could beat Boston U handily on the road, then you got to start saying, okay, you know, even though I have them at number two in my poll, because I was one of the three media members that gave a number one vote to Notre Dame, only because I feel like Notre Dame, if they played Army, they'd beat Army. And that was kind of where my logic went with that. But then I had to reward Army for their win over Syracuse, and then the fact they don't have a bad loss yet. So I had Army at number two. If Army beats Boston U, then I'm still going to put them at number two. And I still won't bump them over Notre Dame unless Notre Dame does something completely crazy and loses this weekend. But yeah, so that's going to be a huge game being played on Friday night. And then as we dive into the rest of it, Ivy League play is underway. So we've got Cornell and Yale going doing battle at noon on Saturday up in Cornell. We've got Harvard and Princeton doing battle. That should be a hell of a game. We have, who else do we've got going here? And New Jersey Tech playing Binghamton at their place, at home, that is. Michigan, Maryland. I mean, obviously, I think the Terps are going to win that game, but that should at least be a big conference game. Carolina High Point, Battle of the North Carolina Carolinian teams. That should be a good one. Syracuse, Hobart. I'll obviously be watching that 5 p.m. That's one of the nightcap games. A very interesting game on the slate is Richmond hosting Georgetown. I think that's going to be a big game, and I think Georgetown may have even been an underdog going into that one, one of my buddies had told me. And then Sunday, Duke will host Denver, and then two huge Big Ten battles come Sunday. Ohio State taking on Penn State at home, and Rutgers hosting Johns Hopkins. So that Sunday slate of games, Duke, Denver, Ohio State, Penn State, Rutgers, Johns Hopkins, that's an absolute incredible day of Sunday lacrosse here, and those are the only three games on. So you can watch Duke and Ohio State. You can watch Duke, Denver, Ohio State, Penn State together. Have two TVs. Don't be a poor. And then Rutgers, Johns Hopkins at 4:30 all by itself. That's going to be a monster. So, hey, that's it. I will be back Sunday to do the show. I'm not going to try to get fancy and try to do anything like I did last week. My problem was I wanted to cover Sunday's games, thinking, okay, shit, let's just do the show Monday morning. Everything's going to be fine. Monday morning hit, and then work hit, and the reality is, oh, crap, I don't have time to do this podcast Monday morning. So you didn't get a show Sunday. I apologize. My life is chaos due to work, and I am trying to keep up, but, you know, work pays me well. And it's really hard to turn down work time to do this, which this does not pay me so well. Which brings me to my point. If you want to see more episodes, and if you would like me to miss fewer and fewer episodes over time, go to laxfactor.com. Just buy some shit. Every t-shirt you buy, I get like $9 or something like that. And you don't, it's not like I'm not going to go to Patreon. Maybe at some point I do the Patreon thing or some sort of subscription just to support, you know, support the channel and try to see what kind of revenue we could eke out of that. But I would prefer people just bought t-shirts and crap like that, because then you actually get something out of that transaction. And what I find funny, very few people had bought the Club Lacrosse All-Star shirt right here up until just recently, because I actually showed it and I said, people, I mean, this is a pretty sick looking shirt here, a drunk Twitter bird, you know, club lacrosse all-star. I mean, that's kind of cool. And people hadn't bought it. I mentioned it on the pod. People started buying it. So now that shirt has been selling. One shirt that I like that I think is low-key pretty sick is this Garden Gnomes t-shirt here. And I mean, same idea. Look at the shirt. I mean, that's not a bad design, people. Garden Gnomes. It's actually a box team, a winter box team that I played on for many years, operated by the famous Nino. And, you know, Nino's running around throwing monkey claws all over on everybody, as Cheech used to say. But that was some fun times playing winter box league. And I think we won the league two or three times here when we were playing the Garden Gnomes. We actually, it was all the Oneonta coaches were on our team. So I'm trying to think of the dude. He coached Stony Brook for a while. What was his name? Why am I drawing a blank on that? Stony Brook lacrosse coaches. What the hell was his name? Was it Nagel? Jim Nagel. I think it was Nagel. Yes, it was Jim Nagel. So Jim Nagel and his cronies, when he was coaching at Oneonta, they were on our team. So, you know, Nagel and I forget who it was. I think there might have been a dude named Spalding or something like that. But anyway, those three, it was him and two of his assistants played on our box team, and they were sick as shit. Actually, I saw one of the dudes bust a backbreaker from the crease. Didn't score it, but it was just a sick shot in the middle of the field in a box game. So, yeah, I'm off the goddamn rails here at this point. So I'm going to shut the hell up. I'm going to get my butt to work here. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. I will pump a show out Sunday for you. I will not miss this weekend. And that is all. Hoost is out.
The Lats Factor Podcast.